Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the beautiful topic of love. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we welcome you all and thank you for joining us. We'll begin with our morning prayer.
This morning I'm reading from Divinity Course in General Collectania, led to page 282. This is Eddie's instruction for in 1904. Okay, it says, repeat the following affirmations silently several times each day, not with strained anxiety to get something out of them, but trying calmly to realize the meaning of the words. God is all. There is no evil. All is harmony. There is no discord. All is health. There is no sickness. All is spirit. There is no matter. All is joy. There is no sorrow. All is truth. There is no falsehood. All is faith, there is no fear. All is life, there is no death. All is love, there is no hate. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you very much. Okay, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 399. Watch that you seek to love others rather than to seek to have others love you. When you seek to have others love you, you are clinging to earth. When you seek to love others without regard for whether that love is returned, you are on the high road to heaven. Mrs. Eddy once said, quote, in human love, you seek someone to love. In divine love, you seek to love. End quote. At another time, she said, quote, in human love, you expect something for yourself. In divine love, you expect something for all. End quote.
Thank you. All right, comments.
It's all about giving. Me.
Pardon me? Go ahead, Lil.
Go ahead.
About giving, not me.
Exactly. Thank you. All right, who else?
That was me. I love this one because it really is obvious that the human love is all about yourself. You want to love somebody or you want to have someone, you know, love you. And this one, especially the last sentence, in human love, you expect something for yourself, but in divine love, you expect something for all. And I just really like that. It just expands that definition of love so much more, that it's for everybody.
Thank you.
It makes life so small when you're just thinking of yourself and your family. It's nice to come here and have it just expand, and everything seems brighter and bigger.
Yeah, this is a real game changer. It's a very basic premise of Christian Science, not to just be doing this all for yourself. I've told this story, and Mrs. Evans would tell it to us too, when she had a bad case of the flu and it wasn't yielding. And finally, the practitioner said, well, are you praying for everyone or for just yourself? And Mrs. Evans realized, no, she was just praying for herself. Once she started to include all mankind in her prayer, she was healed. That's also in the story of Job, isn't it? The end of that, where he says, when he prayed for everyone, that's when his healing came. And yet how many, I certainly was guilty of this. You're just praying for yourself. You want your own little life, your health, your home or whatever, and not thinking of others. And that's missing a major premise of the science. And it might be why your prayers aren't working. It can't be self-centered. It's impossible, because divine love is not self-centered. It includes all, everyone, everything. It encompasses it all. And we must as well. Really, go ahead, Zeri.
I was going to say, this is really important when people seem to wrong us, you know, and Mrs. Eddy said, when she was asked, do you love me, mother? Some of her students said, she said, I just love. And that just has been coming with me, to me all week. I just love, because without love, what are we?
Exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that love is inclusive. You know, it's not just for one people or another people. It is for the good of all.
Thank you. Absolutely, it is. Yes. And so sometimes people say that, you know, they don't know how to love, or, you know, they don't know if their love is human. Well, these are indications, you know, if you, you're just praying for your own family, not so good. Or if you like certain people but not other people, not so good. Those are indications your love is human. It's not divine. Divine love just loves, as Zeri just quoted Mrs. Eddy. She loved even the blade of grass under her feet. Mm-hmm. And somewhere she writes, you know, if you were praying for your own child and you don't really care about your neighbor's children, well, that shows you don't have divine love. Got to care for everyone, everywhere, all the time. Florence?
Yeah, and she also said that just love and include me in it. Somebody was asking her about love, and she said, just love and include me in it. The other thing I've learned is the greater sense of this love that, you know, is a perfection. You know, if you see, we see people the way they really are, that's the greatest love we can give them as a child of God, as that perfection that God made. And that, you know, excludes all the lies that come with them, and it uplifts or enthrones the love, the real love that they are created to express.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes. I think it was Bichdel Young said that's the greatest gift you can give anyone, is to see them as God's child, to see them as a beloved child of God. And that we must be always doing. Go ahead.
Well, and Jesus said that you will know my disciples by the way they love everyone, their neighbor as their son. Love God and love their neighbor. That's how you can tell my disciples, because of who they're, that they love everybody. And I'm watching a program on TV about Jesus and what he brought to the world when he arrived. And this was a totally concept that wasn't even entertained by the world at that time. And so, you know, people, there's a lot of people that call themselves Christians, but that's what tells you whether they really are, is do you love as Jesus did? Then you're a Christian.
Thank you very much. What's the name of the show?
Jesus, the Game Changer.
Okay, Jesus, the Game Changer. Yes, Florence was telling me about
that.
Yes. So
wonderful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've got that on our list of things to watch in the queue. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, people are watching. They're watching you. You claim you're a Christian. They're watching. Are you all or not?
Yeah.
That's why Christianity is so looked down on now, because
yes,
people were false Christians but pretended they were real Christians.
Yeah.
Holier than thou.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, yes. In reality, they just were Pharisees. So.
Yeah. And so,
it's
go ahead, please.
No, I think it's the way that you see God everywhere then. I mean, if you're really seeing people as God made them, his image and likeness, this is the greatest love, that you see God everywhere. Because
yeah.
I think somebody
yes.
gave a testimony. Yeah.
Yes, in all ways and in everything. And to go along with that watching point, in Science and Health it says human affection is not poured forth vainly, even though it meet no return, because mm-hmm. that's another indication. Oh, I did something nice for that person. They're still not nice to me. mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter.
Keeping score never works.
No, that's human love. You do it with strings attached. Right. That's a human love. You just love. If they don't love you, well, that's their business. You just love.
Yeah, what do you think about it?
I was thinking. Go ahead. I was just going to say, Mrs. Eddy was so clear about it. She's like, I expect a lot. Or she said, what did she say in the, you know, she makes big demands on love. You know, she requires a lot of it. It's not, and Jesus did too in the Sermon on the Mount. And that's why he says, you got to love your enemies too. Because if you're just loving the people that love you, what thank have ye? That's the easiest part.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And then if you do that, you'll have no enemies. Elizabeth?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking, Jesus healed. That's how he healed, with that love, by seeing that perfection. And so we have to see the power in the love, because God is love. That's what God is love. Love is God. So it's just, you know, we can't shortchange when we see that someone is really perfect in God's eyes. We are, that power is there too.
Yes.
Yeah. And they feel that power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Eddy also said she couldn't help but love. She loved even the grass beneath her feet.
And you know, if you're in the right mind, that is how you're going to feel. You will just love. You can't help it. If you're in the wrong mind, nuh-uh. Now, Candy from Wisconsin, she sent me two very interesting articles by Peter V. Ross. She was saying, and it's true, Peter V. Ross has a way of writing things that are really just very engaging, I would say. And these both are from 1942. I'm not sure if that means they're under copyright or not. But the first one is called The Persuasiveness of Love. And in it, he says, which this is, needs to be thought about, anyone familiar with animal life, wild or domestic, can multiply instances of devotion, perhaps surpassing human faithfulness. From the high example set by his friends in the forest, men are today learning a willingness to substitute the camera for the gun. A right word from mothers to their sons at an early age would soon put hunting and fishing as a sport out of fashion. Sometime the golden rule will be given universal application, and we shall act toward the lesser creatures as we would have them act toward us. They will respond. Then will the two races cease to prey on each other. Animals will even cease to bark and bite among themselves. The persuasiveness of love will have been more fully set in operation. This is the dominion which is given man over the animal kingdom, not the dominion of terror, but of love. Now, this is in Isaiah, where the lamb lays down with the wolf or the lion, right? There's none of this killing of each other. You know, we engender, we provoke things by our fear, or, you know, movies like Jaws. Christina in Mexico sent me this YouTube. Many of you probably have seen it. I had seen it before too, but it's worth mentioning, about this woman. She'd always wanted to do snorkeling, and anyway, she goes into the ocean, and she began to take hooks out of sharks' mouths. Now, that would seem impossible, right? But I guess it was her love of them and wanting to help them. And pretty soon, sharks with hooks in their mouths would come to her. And she said they are the most magnificent animals, and intelligent, obviously intelligent. And they would snuggle up with her. She would rub their noses. I mean, there's videos of this. We know another story that Parthens had sent to us a long time ago about this. Florence knows it. Many of you might have seen it.
The lady who spoke with the spirit.
Yes.
Leopard. What's called?
Leopard. It was a
Diablo.
Black.
Yeah.
Yes, they named him Diablo. They took him from his home. they put him in a cage and he snarled at everybody. You know, no one could get near him. He wouldn't eat. But then this woman who knew how to communicate with animals, and that book called The Kindred of All Life, is that the name of it? Someone had recommended The Kinship with All Life. That's about this too. Animals, you don't even have to talk. They know what you're thinking. Anyway, she spoke with this leopard. And he said he was mad. They took him out of his home. He had a friend there, a donkey. And he was worried, I think it was a donkey, but he was worried the donkey was okay. And then they named him Diablo, which meant devil.
Mm-hmm.
So they changed their ways. They went and they got the donkey, and he was so happy. They were so happy to see each other. And then they changed his name to Spirit. And he became a different creature. Go ahead, Florence. Florence loves this story, too.
No, I mean, he behaved differently. I mean, he was content, pleased, you know, and there were two, I think it's two lepers that their mother had died or something that was left behind. And they brought them over to where Spirit was, too. And they got along very nicely. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Beautiful. The change in him because of the change in how people were thinking about him.
And yes.
If you think of somebody like a devil, how do you expect them to act like an angel?
Exactly. And so it is with all things. All things. And our the responsibility is in our thinking. What do we think about them? And that goes into, you know, the minutest forms, the ticks, the fleas, the mosquitoes, and all of that. You know, if we think they're harmful and damaging and all of this, well, watch your thinking, please. We know this as scientists. Let's change the world. Let's have the kingdom of heaven on earth. And we can do it with small beginnings, but do what we must. And so I love that. And then the other article by Peter V. Ross was called Normal Living, another 1942. Now, he writes, Napoleon looked for lucky generals, so it is said, by which he meant those generals who do not associate defeat with their campaigns. There are plenty of people today to whom the thought of failure or sickness seldom occurs. They are not lucky. They are normal. Divine mind diffuses spiritual ideas in man, thoughts of strength, confidence, gladness, plentitude. Listen for them and act upon them. Hear, O Israel, is the command. Is it not? We are not lacking resources, stamina, and ability, but lacking appreciation of their presence. Assurances of present abundance are not far-fetched. Think them out and dwell upon them, whether they pertain to career, home, or health. Put forth industrious effort to bring these assurances to pass. Then will this supposedly grudging world begin to yield more bountifully. Spiritual law is made operative in human affairs. And then it goes on, and he addresses something which I always find amusing, but we are not, he says, why look afar off for paradise? The marvel is at hand. We are not likely to improve human conditions by exaggerated utterances or exertions. One will hardly promote health, for instance, by smartly asserting that he has no body. And this is what Christian scientists do this. Will it not be wiser to pay more respect to the present concept of body and treat it normally with a view to its improvement? And he goes on, you know, that it's important. Of course, you do use absolute statements, but sometimes people go around with these absolute statements. They have no idea what it means. Mrs. Eddy says, don't use them unless you can prove it.
Right.
But to say you have no body, and that's not even true. You do have a body, and it's just not a material, physical one. It exists in divine mind.
And it doesn't do anyone else any good to hear that.
It doesn't. And this is why, be normal, not weird. We talk about it. Don't be a weird Christian Scientist, please. Your Heavenly Father knoweth ye have need of all things, promises Jesus. What things? Something to do, something to live for, someone to care for, health and strength, faith and aspiration, home and companionship, and these, here and now, on a level with our present development. Herein lies the attractiveness and practicality of Christian Science, that it brings these very blessings to people today and establishes for them better conditions and still better until the ideal is reached. Divine mind knows your needs and satisfies them, for the heart of the eternal is most wonderfully kind. Rely on these assurances, merit their reward. Christ's truth gives mortals temporary food and clothing until the material transformed with the ideal disappears and man is clothed and fed spiritually. Science and health. Normal living. Let's all be normal. And please, when you give your testimonies, and you have been, but don't say these outlandish absolute truths. We are out to attract new people. I mean, the Christian Scientists might understand what you mean, but the new person doesn't. They'll think, boy, what a bunch of kooks. So mind what you say. Don't use the jargon. Make it real, please. So, dear Peter V. Ross, and he was excommunicated, was he not? All right. Yes. His works, all of them, are wonderful. His books, I'm so glad Candy was quoting all these beautiful things to me from him. And it's true. And we have his books and lectures and articles, and also Leaves of Healing. And Bruce has them recorded.
And he loves.
Were those articles from the book that we have, lectures and articles by Ross, or are they not part of that?
I don't think so. And I don't know whether it's under copyright. Carrie would know, but 42, I always forget what so if we can, we will feature them. These came from one's an editorial, you know, they come from the Sentinel. And so those of you who are members of whatever that thing is, they can get access to this. The other's from a Christian Science journal. Okay, that's where they came from.
We can't publish them.
We cannot.
No, they're too new.
They're too new. See, it would seem not so, but so that's why we haven't published them. But if you have an old journal from 1942, or if you can access that thing, the JSH or whatever it's called,
or just listen again to what Mary read.
Yeah.
Or listen again. Take notes. All right. Okay, Chardell, what did you send me?
Okay, we have love. The following is taken from 500 Watching Points by Gilbert Carpenter. I've just taken a little bit of it, so you might want to look at it. It's 34. Watch that you be consistent in your handling of error, not overlooking an error in yourself or claiming immunity from it, while you continue to hold it as real in another. One burned-out bulb in a string of Christmas tree lights that are connected in series will cause them all to go out. As God's children, we are all banded together in the bonds of love. To see one of God's little ones as a burned-out bulb, or as cut off from God and hence under the control of error, shuts off your current and robs you of your spiritual light. And this is what Mr. Carpenter wrote. I see myself as God's own child, as perfect in his sight. I see my brother man as well, a perfect child of light. Then, to complete my prayer, I see him seeing me aright. I see him seeing me, seeing him as perfect in love's sight.
Thank you. That little poem is a gem. You all must have it and know it, because how often, oh, I'm seeing him right. But you don't see him seeing you right. Therefore, that's a form of malpractice. It's wonderful. These early workers, oh my gosh, it was just wonderful what they gleaned, what they gathered from Mrs. Eddy's works.
And Carpenter spent only 1 year in Mrs. Eddy's home, but he took good notes. And when his year was over, Mrs. Eddy said she was very sorry to see him go, that he had work to do. And he did. He did it well.
And then he sat on this stuff and prayed on it. And it, you know, it was like 25 years later when he started writing everything he wrote.
Exactly.
Yeah, people would come and talk to him and ask him questions about being in Mrs. Eddy's home, and it was recorded. It was all recorded. I think his son recorded it. And then from that, they wrote all these wonderful volumes of
footsteps.
Yeah, footsteps, precepts, watches, prayers, and arguments, watching points. And the more familiar you are with all of this, the better it is, because he does tell how Mrs. Eddy used the science and the great love that she expressed. All right, the golden texts.
Galatians, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ.
And Nancy, just the second part of your contribution, the brother's keeper.
Yes. Sure. I found a beautiful, I took an excerpt from a very, very good article called The Brother's Keeper from a 1905 journal by Mary Brookins. In the account of Joshua's preparation for the priesthood, we read that he was clothed with filthy garments and stood before the angel. And the angel said to those who were about him, take away the filthy garments from him. This same angel says to us, take away the false and unclean thoughts with which you have clothed your brother, and free him to the full extent of your ability from the weight of sense testimony against him. Thus doing, we shall obey the apostle's injunction, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. This does not interfere with the truth and justice of that seemingly contradictory statement that every man shall bear his own burden. Each one must do his share, as Matthew Arnold, who was an English poet, tersely puts it. No man can save his brother's soul nor pay his brother's debt. The bearing of another's burden is, in itself, the burden that each must bear for himself. And so long as he fails to do this, he cannot be conscious of any lightening of his own load. While we are purifying and spiritualizing our thought in regard to our brother and releasing him from material bonds so far as we are able, he, in his turn, is doing the same for us and for others who come to his notice. That is the divine law fulfilled, that each shall love his neighbor as himself. I really liked that. I thought that was really good.
So in an article that Carrie sent, it brings out there really are two kinds of burdens. I mean, one, they say bear one another's burdens. The other says every man should bear his own burden. So what's the difference?
It seems to me when you're working with a practitioner, they're helping you with your burden, but you're ultimately responsible for what you're thinking and how you're acting, and you have to change that and work at it. Yeah, you can't just wave a magic wand and
that's good. That's very true. Yes.
Well, we can help. Okay. We can help as God directs to kind of lift another one up when they're down. But we can't live their life for them. And God tells you what the difference is. You know, the people who want to live other people's lives for them and tell them everything to do and all of that, you know, they're trespassing on God's work.
Well, what about your own salvation? Isn't it you taking care of your burden.
Thank you. Thank you. You can't work out anyone else's salvation for them.
Right.
No, that's their work. Right.
And as whatever you learn, I think the law of kindness wants you to be an example for others. So a good way to do that is to at least try to get them to feel as you feel about the joy of doing good.
Thank you. That's beautiful. And Craig is an example of that. And what Nancy read, you know, if you look at someone and you think, oh, my gosh, what a mess they are, you're adding to their burden. You're not helping them at all. You're not doing your Christian Science duty, really, to see them correctly. But sometimes people are truly suffering, and you should help them. You know, I mean, we had some instances here, you know, with these bad flooding recently, and one of our members, his house got it very badly flooded. And of course, you go and help. You don't just say, oh, well, whatever. You do whatever you can to help those situations. You do. But you don't work out another person's salvation for them, as Florence was saying, or get in the middle trespassing, as Gary was saying, and into their lives and thinking you know what they should do. And maybe they're even burdened by false thinking. So then you turn them to science, right? You help them in that way. Mm-hmm. You help them in that way. But otherwise, gets to be a bit much. So, yeah. So we are compassionate and loving, but the two kinds of burdens, and it can be human do-goody compared to the divine love, as we talked about earlier. So, as Gary was saying too, we always ask God, what is the need? You meet the need. You meet them from where they're coming from. You meet that need. But you also, you do not let them take advantage of you, which they will do if you just pour out things indiscriminately, give them money or whatever continually. That's undermining their own growth. That's not helping. That's harming them. That's enabling them to, well, not be...
Not work for themselves.
Not do the work for themselves. Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead, Florence.
No, the guided or the led help that you give someone, and then you're seeing them as God sees them, that really uplifts them to do their own work.
Yes, it does. And that's really the work of the practitioner, too, when it's that work. When they should feel that lift and then be able to carry on themselves. And really, people who are right, they're not going to ask for anything more than that. If they ask more than that, if they're constantly wanting money or other things, then that's something different. Silver and gold have I not, but what I have is the Christ, and that I give to you freely. Jeremy?
Well, yeah, it just reminds me of something I told somebody once about. The way that they were raising their son was all they're doing is making a soft place to land, and then the kid thinks, oh, I can fall from higher, you know, live better. And that's not what we're supposed to be doing. That's very human. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there have been articles out recently that parents have been way too indulgent with their children. We have to get back to the more old-fashioned way of bringing up your child, because when the adult gets into society, they don't know how to function because they've been so protected. They've been so coddled that they just don't know how to deal with the real world. It's not helpful. So I'm glad to see that. You have to have some limits and guidance and be a parent, not just try to be a friend. All right. Now, there's the word use hospitality one to another. And that word we were taught here can mean, for instance, a hospital. What does a hospital do? it should minister one to another. And we were once told here, when if you ever have to go to a hospital, to consider it as hospitality. In other words, not be so afraid of it and all these horrible people. Again, what are we seeing? What are you looking for? Of course, none of us want to go there. And I'm not suggesting that you do, nor was I suggesting that you swim with sharks. I am suggesting that whatever situation you're in, apply the truth, whatever that might be. So in this article on hospitality from a 1923 journal by Daisy Bedford, she says, "Old world conditions need to experience the healing touch of the Christ truth, and however simple the task may be upon which we are engaged, if perfectly performed, just there we may hear the voice of Christ saying, 'Follow thou me.' In the calm of the summer morning, as the disciples were engaged in the humble task of mending their nets, probably chatting about their catch of the night before, there came a call to leave this task and to be made fishers of men. And immediately they obeyed. It is interesting to note that the readiness to obey the call of truth is so often brought out as regards all that appertained to our Master's ministry in such terms as the following: instantly, straightway, immediately, indicating the alertness which was always ready to give or receive a blessing. And this too must be our attitude. To be always willing to work for God in faithfully fulfilling the trivial round, the common task." So, and that goes along with never absent from your post.
Never off guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for
thank you.
God.
Never off guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for God. Thank you. Yes, that's our something we live with. And I thought it was interesting in this week's lesson, too. Christians are under direct orders now as they were then. Direct orders. That's not do it if you feel like it, folks. And then at all times and under all circumstances, overcome evil with good. Again, not sometimes when you're feeling like it. You know, because when you just hate this person, you want to hate him, it doesn't matter. No, at all times and under all circumstances, overcome evil with good. Know thyself, and God will supply the wisdom and occasion for a victory over evil. And then this, it should be thoroughly understood that all men have one mind, one God and Father, one life, truth, and love. Mankind will become perfect in proportion as this fact becomes apparent. War will cease, and the true brotherhood of man will be established. Do you thoroughly understand this? Do you have pockets of people that you just don't like? Well, you're not a Christian Scientist. Please don't say you are, because you are not. You have to thoroughly understand this. When we do it individually and collectively, it will heal the world of all these wars and terrible things that go on that should not be.
Experience, you know, medieval, it has helped me many times with, it doesn't mean just do your best, but it means don't give up, because it talks about perseverance, and it may be more than one day of your effort, because there have been times when I was suffering. And until I took the attitude, well, I know you're God's and in his care, and what you're showing me is not true, and nothing you can do can make change my mind. That the problem went away. It stopped fighting, or the lie, and I was at peace much quicker. When Aaron knows the lie that he can't, and no matter how long it waits, you can wait longer.
That's great.
Thank you, Craig. That is so good. That is so important, because when you stand up to it and make up your mind that nothing's going to cross that line, then the error
kind of goes away.
Yeah, I mean, it'll back
because
off.
It does not have the power that love and truth have.
There's no power. And thank you. Sometimes you just have to be persistent day after day. Every morning you get up. Maybe you made some stumbles yesterday, but today you're going to do better.
It's in the lesson. I love this. Wait patiently for divine love to move upon the waters of mortal mind and form the perfect concept. Patience must have her perfect work.
There we are.
I have to live that.
That's it. That's it. So you have patience with others and with yourself.
And doesn't it say somewhere that the end is from the beginning, something like that? And it's so comforting because if you know that the outcome, God already has the outcome of you established. And so it's just such a comforting feeling to know that, yes, I can ride over these currents of mortal mind, as Mrs. Eddy says, and I don't have to be touched by it. I can just, you know, be so grateful and knowing that that wonderful outcome is right there for me.
Yes, thank
and
you.
All. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And, you know, then again, happiness is spiritual, born of truth and love. It is unselfish. That goes back to our watching point. Therefore, it cannot exist alone, but requires all mankind to share it. So, again, if things aren't working out for you or you can't get over your depression, are you sharing your love with all mankind, or are you?
How is your divine love?
How is your divine love? Yes, absolutely. So now, Carrie sent me two really beautiful articles about the story of Ruth. I've always loved that story. I think it's maybe my favorite, if I have a favorite. But these two bring out some good points to it that maybe I hadn't thought about so deeply. One is called Mothers in Israel by a Margaret Marshall, 1930 journal. Says, the book of Ruth is well beloved of Bible students for the lesson it teaches of unselfishness, loyalty, gentleness, tenderness, humility, patience, gratitude. In thoughtfully studying the record that its lessons might be applied to present-day needs, one student realized that because Ruth's consciousness was so filled with love, this divine quality was reflected in her surroundings soon after she had suffered a grievous human experience. It was noted that she did not allow a lingering and mesmeric habit of bemoaning her fate to fasten itself upon her. Nor did she magnify the sad circumstances of her widowhood or the lonely sense of being in a strange country without kindred or supply. Mm. Now think about that. If she had been boo-hoo-hooing after a certain point, I know it's hard not to grieve, but if you keep at it and you keep indulging in it, you are blocking out all the good that God is pouring forth to you this very moment. It's a very important point. Look at what she did by not doing that. She loved Naomi. And it matters not what be thy lot, so love doth guide. Right?
Yes.
And love what designates, that inspires, designates, illumines, and leads the way. Love. But if she was in a state of depression, because, you know, well, this was pretty awful what happened to them. It was very awful, especially in those days when the women seemed so dependent on the man. But she didn't. She loved, and she was willing to work. And because of that, she was prepared. She turned from the false sense of personal sorrow and followed the one God, divine love, wherever he might lead. That's true, too, because Naomi, you know where they were going back to? You know where they were going to?
Bethlehem.
Yes, Bethlehem. Isn't that beautiful? And Naomi believed in the one God. And Ruth had respect for that. I don't know what the Moabites believed in, but I don't think it was that. So anyway, she was ready to leave all that past behind, follow in love. And because of that, she was so lifted out of that experience that Boaz noticed her. She was married and became what, the great grandmother of King David. This article says, an understanding of the one God divine love has healed many struggling with the belief of conflict in their home problems. They have found freedom and comfort in the same spiritual sense of love which was manifested by Ruth when she said, thy people shall be my people. It is only evil belief that claims to separate God's children. This evil belief is one of the most prolific sources of human discord, and it should be regarded not so much as a personal problem involving certain related individuals, as an opportunity which evil uses to vaunt its so-called power to create inharmonious conditions. Looked upon from the standpoint of Christian Science, it becomes clear that seeds of strife and separation do not come from God, infinite good. And one who seeks the harmony that always results from spiritual understanding refuses to nourish any such subtle suggestion of error sowing. And then following where love led, Naomi and Ruth, finding each other in the one Father, Mother, God, arrived in Bethlehem. And then all the wonderful things that happened to her. And then that led to the coming of the Christ. Mm-hmm. The coming of Mary Baker Eddy. And in a second article, equally as good, and we should have it on the website. This is by Clara Streeter. I don't think we do. It's a 1918-10, the Christian Science Journal. Whose daughter art thou? And it says, in the story of Abraham, you know, trying to find a wife for his son, I guess, he sent his servant out looking, and the servant came upon Rebecca. And this was a long time ago. And the servant said, whose daughter art thou? Now, Rebecca knew who and what she was, right? She knew who she was. And so she told him humanly whose daughter she was. But then she was elevated up to going back with a servant, marrying Isaac. The right sense of womanhood. And then it goes on. he said it's the first romance in the Bible. Showed awakened thought. And that was 4,000 years before. No, it says 6 centuries after that, then came Ruth. And it was the same kind of a thing. She knew who she was. And it's beautiful in the Bible lesson this week, the virtues, a virtuous woman, right? The wonderful qualities of a virtuous woman. So, and in that, Boaz says, whose damsel is this? Who are you? Well, she knew to some degree who she was. And that lifted her out of all that depression and oppression. And then the story of Mary, you know, and Mary said, behold, the handmaid of the Lord. She knew who she was too. And she brought forth the Christ. And then because Jesus saw the perfect man, he spoke to the woman of Samaria, right? And got her on the right track. And then it does mention Paul. Paul bound the early Christian women with conventionalities. He kind of made a few boo-boos, Paul. I will remember the good he did. But it says that in the history of the past, it is clearly seen that through ignorance, superstition, convention, and the abuse of power by man, woman has been held in bondage to man-made laws. Only through the general diffusion of knowledge are women learning to think, act, speak for themselves, and to insist upon the recognition of the fact that God made the earth for his daughters, as well as for his sons. And of course, then we have someone tremendous was Mary Baker Eddy in 1866, when there were all these limitations to women. And yet she accepted none of them and rose to greater heights. So it's quite a beautiful article. And it says, throughout all her writings, Mrs. Eddy has tried to make it clear that the equalization of the sexes was an important part of Jesus' healing mission. And she has set forth a precedent in the manual of the Mother Church. The readers for the Mother Church shall be a man and a woman. One to read the Bible and one to read Science and Health. Do you know how revolutionary there was at that time to say that? Yeah.
Even in the 50s, I didn't see many women ministers.
That's true. It still goes on. It still happens. So it's quite
churches
wonderful.
That are stuck by convention aren't going to make that change very easily.
And led by intellectuality.
Yes.
Or whatever.
And it goes on to say that this women of today is a wondrous opportunity. And how is it being used by you? Mm-hmm. And it goes on. It's very, very beautiful. But what are we doing, women, with their womanhood? And of course, we know ultimately there are no genders. But we must be the highest type of man and woman. Whose daughter art thou? Okay, and now it is time to end this with another beautiful article from Carrie.
This is an article entitled The True Sense of Love by Emma Harris Jameson from a 1906 Sentinel or Journal, not sure which. Anyway, she writes, "Love for God and love for man is our motto in Christian Science, and we cannot afford to lose sight of it. It is love which bids us go forth on the errands of mercy, to whisper to the sad and desolate, 'You are loved,' or to send the flowers that bear sweet messages of true sympathy and helpfulness. I shall never forget the first and only time I ever saw Mrs. Eddy. It was at Concord, in front of the church there, a few years ago. Three times her carriage passed by. The first time, she was wondrously quiet. There was even a look of sadness on her face. The second time, her face lighted up with a smile, as here and there she recognized one in the throng of her followers who were waiting to see her. The third time, she leaned forward in the carriage and looked out of the window and bowed with smiles. But when she got to where I was, her face was turned in the opposite direction, and I thought I should not see her again when, as she was almost by, she turned and bowed with a sweet and loving light upon her face that seemed to say, 'I love you all.' This thought was with me for many days afterwards, and whenever I think of her now, it is always in connection with the thought of infinite love as she reflected it that day. Our leader's heart is so full of love that it expresses itself in her face. And when I hear any criticism of her, it makes me smile to myself, for I think if they could only see that loving face and feel the inspiration of her presence, they too would love her. Divine love can never be anything less than pure and holy, no matter what the mortal belief may be. It is for us to respond more fully to the divine influence that we may live in the fullest sense. If one has a plant that is not catching the sun's rays, he need not expect the sun to change its course in order to shine upon the plant, but he can change the position of the plant so that it can drink in the sunshine and blossom out in beauty and strength. Divine love is to poor suffering humanity what the sunshine is to the earth, and all must come to see this. We who name the name of Christ in Christian Science are called upon to show to others the power of love. And Mrs. Eddy has set us the example by the life she lives and the love she radiates.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.